As I was sitting there listening to the music, I found myself once again kind of transfixed in these paintings behind me that we have on our palettes. If you don't know, they were painted by our very own Ron Bell. And did you also know that he made this cross? Isn't it beautiful? It's fantastic. Ron has a great gift. I'm just going to brag on you for a second. Ron has a great gift. At least for me, I can speak for myself, that as I look upon his artwork, it transports me into a state of worship and perception that I don't know that I would otherwise go to. Because as I was listening to the song and thinking about these different stages of pictures, I thought about the circular just reality of life. That sometimes we may find ourselves in the very darkness that eventually gets brighter. But then sometimes it goes right back to dark again, and that's life. We've kind of acknowledged that this morning in worship, that, you know, Christmas, for some of us, may have been a great day, may have been a joyful day. For others of us, maybe it was not as great, as joyful. We may have found ourselves in various shades that we see here. And then again, as we continue this Christmas story, we are reminded that even Christ himself and the family was not always in this bright moment. Sometimes they were in very profound darkness. So I just want to thank Ron for just once again, at least helping me kind of remember that and live into that reality, that we can find ourselves in any of these colors, any of these shades at any given time. But we acknowledge that here, that just because we're here does not mean that we are in a state of perfection. In fact, it's really the opposite. We continue to strive for that and look for it, and sometimes just say, I have no idea where I'm going. And that's kind of what we're talking about today as we continue the season of Christmas. And so I invite us to open our hearts and our minds to hear the second part of this Christmas story. After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt. And the angel said, get up and take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who are trying to take the child's life are gone. So Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, that he would be called a Nazarene. Are we there yet? It is a question that we have either heard or probably said at some point in our lives, to the hair pulling of anyone who hears us ask that question. Or maybe we pulled out some of our own hair. I know I have. We typically hear this phrase, or we use it when we're going on a long trip, you know, a vacation, maybe going to see family, maybe just driving through some part of the world. I know I have said this countless times, driving through the flatlands of Kansas. If you have ever driven from Kansas to Colorado, you have to ask that question at least 10,567 times. I know, because I made that rule. We are constantly asking, maybe not even physically, but maybe philosophically, are we there yet? We know what that's like, but do we know what it's like to ask that question when our lives depend on it? A time when we are desperately traveling to or maybe away from something, do we know what it's like to ask that question because of the fear that we are experiencing? Are we there yet? The other day I read this paragraph that stuck with me. The person wrote, within the narrative of the Christian calendar, the birth of Christ is not followed by leaping lords and milkmaids, but by a massacre of children. The Feast of the Holy Innocents, observed on December 28th by Western churches and on December 29th by Orthodox churches, speaks a particularly powerful word to this cultural moment. It is a bloody story out of which hope fights its way to the surface. In Luke's gospel, as most of us remember, Joseph and Mary travel to Bethlehem, not as a vacation, not as one last adventure before they are married and become parents. They travel to Bethlehem because it was mandated. They had to go to register for tax purposes. Now, in the Gospel of Matthew, which I just read, there's no mention of them traveling, so it's possible that they already lived there. But the story still reveals that it was the time of King Herod, which the people of that time would read or hear and understand. This was a time of oppression. It is in this time that Jesus Christ is born. And it is in the midst of this mandate where Joseph and Mary are undoubtedly surrounded by other people in their situation of life, people who are poverty-stricken, oppressed families, individuals, people in the midst of being in a lonely place of life, people who are maybe not trusted like the shepherds. It is in the midst of all of this that Jesus Christ is born, a light which breaks through every darkness of every person who has ever asked that question, are we there yet? We are still at the Christmas season. Now, it may not feel like that for some of us. Perhaps we've already taken down our lights, we've emptied our trees, we have boxed up all the decorations, we've turned our radio stations back. We do not want to see one more glitter-colored anything. But the question still comes, are we there yet? Because part of the Christmas season, part of the Christmas story is sometime after the birth of Jesus, this Messiah, this Savior, the one who so many proclaim is the reason for the season, becomes the victim of King Herod, who by this story seems to be a petulant ruler who is enraged anytime he is outsmarted. The result is he declares all boys 2 years old and younger to be slaughtered. And so Jesus becomes a refugee. A refugee, of course, is someone who seeks refuge. Isn't that what the church is supposed to provide? Refuge? Sanctuary for those who are in need? At a former church I served, one Advent season, we did a study on A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. And as we got to the part of the spirit of Christmas present, we talked about Scrooge's outlook on who were labeled the poor and the destitute, and how do we in our time recognize those similar individuals, people who we have labeled. And so we talked about the reality of how so many in our own community were experiencing poverty and being cold and homeless and just being ignored. And then we got to talking about, well, what should our church be doing? Or, as some people think, what our church should not be doing. And then one of the members of this church, I'll never forget it, as we were talking about those who were poor and cold and hungry and homeless, they actually said the words, "Have they no refuge?" And I had to just kind of sit there. When Scrooge is visited by the spirit of Christmas present, he is taken to places that he would never have chosen to go himself. He interacts with those who he considered to be lowly, to be not worth his time. And it always makes me wonder when I read that story or when I watch one of the several movies, I think, what are we to do when we are finally faced with those who we have chosen to ignore?
Many in this room. passed through. At least there's one thing still free in this country.
Mary, pizza they cooked.
That's too hot.
Be cold soon enough.
Where did you get these, Father?
I didn't steal them, if that's what you're saying.
She didn't say you stole them, Ben.
She should have some respect.
Don't berate the girl. They fell from a cart into the road.
Your father's not a thief, girl. Not yet.
Why are these people out here? Men and women in rags, children eating scraps. There are institutions.
Have you visited any of them, these institutions you speak of?
No, I'm taxed for them. Isn't that enough?
Is it?
Ben, come back to the fire.
Look at these hands, Meg. They're hard hands. They've done hard work. I want to work. I want to have bread for my children. It's not right that there's no work.
Together, Ben, that's the important thing.
I love you, Meg. I love the children. Tomorrow, take the children and go to the parish poorhouse.
No. I'd rather we all drowned in the river than go to one of those places and be separated forever.
Until I get work.
No. Ben, we're a family. We stay together. Come back to the fire. Come.
Are you sure of this? What has it to do with me?
Are they not of the human race? Look here! Beneath my robe!
What are they?
They are your children. They are the children of all who walk the earth unseen. Their names are ignorance and want. Beware of them. For upon their brow is written the word doom. They spell the downfall of you and all who deny their existence.
Have you no refuge, no resource?
Are there no workhouses? Are there no prisons?
Cover them. I do not wish to see them.
I thought as much. They are hidden, but they live. Oh, they live. Well, time has come for me to leave you, Ebenezer Scrooge.
Leave me here.
Oh, yes.
Now, take me back to my bed. It's too late. It's cold, the place is strange, don't you? Spirit. Come back. I wish to talk. I have made a mistake here and there. Talked too quickly about matters to which I gave no great thought. Very well, we'll have a give and take, come to some meeting of the minds. I'm a reasonable man. Spirit! Have pity on me. Don't leave.
There's a quote in this part of the story that most films don't use, and I wish they did. When the Spirit says to Scrooge, "Oh God, to hear the insect on the leaf pronouncing on the too much life among his hungry brothers in the dust." The children that the Spirit reveal are ignorance and want. The girl is want and the boy is ignorance. I'm going to read you directly how it is that Dickens writes it, because most movies don't get it totally right. "Beware them both," the Spirit tells Scrooge, "and all of their degree, but most of all, beware this boy. For upon his brow, the brow of ignorance, I see that which is written, doom, unless the writing be erased. Deny it," the Spirit says, stretching out his hands toward the city. "Slander those who tell about it." And then this is the part that always haunts me. "Admit it for your factious purposes. Admit it for your factious purposes and make it worse. For then doom shall engulf you all." And then, of course, Scrooge's question, well, have they no refuge? Have they? This is part of our Christmas story. Jesus, the Savior, the Messiah, God with us, forced to flee his place of birth as an infant because his parents are terrified that to stay is to die. And so the Messiah must take refuge elsewhere. If Jesus were old enough at this time to speak, if he were to ask the question, "Are we there yet?" what would his parents have told him? Are we there yet? Will we ever get there? Do we even know where and what there is? Can we get there before doom engulfs us all? Thomas Merton, who is an American monk, he was, and a writer, once wrote this: "Into this world, this demented inn, in which there is absolutely no room for him at all, Christ has come uninvited. But because he cannot be at home in it, because he is out of place in it, and yet must be in it, his place is with those others. Those others for whom there is no room. His place is with those who do not belong, who are rejected by power because they are regarded as weak, those who are discredited, who are denied the status of persons, tortured, exterminated. With those for whom there is no room, Christ is present in this world." We saw an example at the very beginning of this service of those whom others have rejected for various reasons, and those are children. Children who have found their way, one way or another, to the Florida Children's Home, run by people who once said, "We take those no one else wants." And as you may have heard the lady in the video at the very end say, these children need to know that there are those thinking about them. And of course, that's not just limited to the Florida Children Home. That's right here in Lakeland. It's right here in this church. But it is all over the world. Have they no refuge? Why else are we here? And so as we come to this table to receive communion, we proclaim and we practice the belief that all are invited and welcome to come to this table. That invitation is given by someone who himself was uninvited, and yet he is here. I have the joy of sharing with you that next week for Epiphany Sunday, the message will be given by our own Reverend Dr. Sharon Austin. If you've not heard Sharon preach ever before, it is an experience you will never, ever, ever forget. So I hope that you can be here. Let others know that she is preaching. It will be phenomenal, I guarantee you. As we depart, I want to share with you a message that comes from St. Francis that reminds us that in these difficulties, there is a way forward. We are able to continue to take this light of Christ with us. It doesn't mean that it will be easy, but when we recognize one another as who we are, as who we are supposed to be in God, the light becomes even brighter. And so may God bless you with discomfort. Discomfort at easy answers, at half-truths, and superficial relationships, so that you may live deep within your heart. May God bless you with anger, at injustice, oppression, and exploitation of people, so that you may work for justice, freedom, and peace. May God bless you with tears, to shed for those who suffer pain, rejection, hunger, and war, so that you may reach out your hand and comfort them, and turn their pain into joy. And may God bless you with enough foolishness to believe that you can make a difference in the world so that you can do what others claim cannot be done, to bring justice and kindness to all our children and the poor. May this be the Christmas story that takes us into the new year as the people God has called us to be. And may we go in that peace and in that love. Merry Christmas.